Adam. Welcome back to Bringing It Backwards, a podcast where legendary and rising artists tell their own personal stories of how they achieve stardom. On this episode, we had a chance to talk with Life on Planets, over Zoom video. Life was born and raised in Maryland. He talks about how he got into music. His dad was a DJ growing up, so he used to listen to his dad's mixtapes in the car. Started playing clarinet in third grade. Eventually advanced to the saxophone. I believe he was in fifth. Played that all the way up through high school. We talk about how he sold his first saxophone for some sneakers. He ended up going to art school. Talked about being a chimney sweep, quitting that job to just busk. A conversation between him and his roommate to record a song that he kept playing over and over because his roommate's like, dude, every time I see you, every time I walk in this house, I just hear that song. We need to just record it. We need to record it. So he talks about that. Signing a couple deals before moving to New York City in 2019. All about the new music he has coming out and all about his most recent song, Nomad Life. You can watch the interview with Life and myself on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards. Be rad if you subscribe to our channel, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Bringing Back Pod. And if you're an Amazon shopper, a portion of your everyday purchases will help support our podcast with just a few clicks. It's super easy. Please head over to our website, bringingitbackwards.com, and click on Amazon each time you begin your purchases. Those few extra clicks will help keep our mission of providing a platform for both legendary and rising artists to tell their personal stories on how they achieve stardom so that all artists and music enthusiasts have access to meaningful and memorable advice that will help inspire their own musical journeys. To recap, please head over to bringingitbackwards.com and click on Amazon before you make each and every purchase, because a portion of that purchase will add up in a big way to help support our mission. Thank you so much.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Life on Planets. So my name is Adam, and this is about your journey in music, and we'll talk about how you got to where you are today.
Perfect. Let's bring it back.
Let's do it. And I love that you, on your TV that you wrote, what does it say in the dust?
That's good TV.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And is that a painting behind you on the window?
It's actually, I'm not sure what went down here. I'm working out of my manager's office here while in LA, but I guess outside they painted all the windows black and inside they painted them gold. But yeah, it looks kind of like an eye, like a bird.
It does.
Eye.
Yeah. I thought it's rad. I like it.
It's really cool.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, tell me about, where were you born and raised, Life?
So I was born in Gaithersburg, Maryland.
Okay.
Raised there, went to, you know, high school, and then I went to college in Baltimore, Maryland. So I'm a Marylander through and through. Stayed in Baltimore, you know, when I got, I guess, picked up by labels and stuff. And then it was only like, maybe like right before the pandemic that I finally moved away and moved to New York.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, so you were in Maryland all the way up until the pandemic?
Pretty much. I moved to New York the summer of 2019.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Right before everything hits, right?
It's like, I'm packing my bag. I'm gonna start over in New York and like try to chase the dream, crack the Big Apple.
I love it.
Yeah.
What was it like growing up in Maryland?
It was cool. I mean, I kind of remember it being dreary a lot. I don't know why that is, but it was a rainy place in the winter. But you know, lots of like shopping malls. You go to the movies on the weekends. Pretty like suburban life.
Right on. And how about music? How did you get into music? Were born in a musical family at all? Siblings, brothers, or parents musical?
Yeah, my dad was actually a DJ when he was a kid.
I guess, rad.
Like 20s, he would play all the like local like house parties and stuff. And he was known as the Chillsbury Kid.
That was his DJ name, Chillsbury Kid. DJ name,
yeah. But he would always play me like his mixtapes in the car. It would be like P-Funk and Slave, War, you know, that old song, what Double Dutch Bus. I forget who that's by, but
War, didn't they have Lowrider was War, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Man. But yeah, so that was like some of my musical education. And then when I was like in third grade, I started playing clarinet. I really wanted to play saxophone, worked my way up to playing sax, played sax until like high school, and then started singing in pop punk bands.
Really?
I was like a huge fan of like Panic at the Disco and Fall Out Boy and like hardcore, you know, we were always going to like the church on the weekends. The church would have all the hardcore shows for some reason.
Oh, and that's interesting to me.
All these guys from out of town, you know, headbanging and stuff. And I'd be there in my little skinny jeans and my, I don't know, emo band t-shirt and just loving it. So yeah.
Wow. Well, to back up real quick. So you started off on clarinet. Why didn't you just start off on the saxophone? I played clarinet in fifth grade and gave it up halfway through fifth grade.
I guess it was a rite of passage. They were like, all right, if he wants to play sax, he's got to play clarinet for a year.
Oh, and weird. Okay.
So I just had to.
So you did that in third grade, you started.
Yeah.
And then you play, do you still play sax? You've got to know how to still do it.
I can still do it. When it's pretty lame, but I sold my sax for a pair of sneakers.
Oh, really, what kind of sneakers?
They were Supras.
Okay, there you go.
I really wanted these Sky Tops, and I was going to school, and my folks were like, we already spent a bunch of money on your books and whatever. And I was like, all right, I'm gonna give up the sax.
Wow. You still have the kicks though.
I don't have the kicks. I was skating in them, and like I wore a hole in the bottom and water was starting to come in, and I was just like, all right, these are done. But I did get another sax. I got another one like on Craigslist, got it fixed up at the shop when I was like, I don't know, like maybe 21, 22. Mm-hmm. And I started playing it and I was jamming a lot. And I realized like, I really only knew like this, like middle school amount of saxophone.
Right.
And I was like, this isn't, you know, like coming as naturally as like the guitar was. Cause by then I was playing guitar and like very like more fluent, I would say, in the guitar and singing. And so I think eventually like I was having a move and I didn't bring the sax. I sold it again. I would really like to get one of those like MIDI air controllers.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That would be really fun to play with. To like, just to have like the breath in there and to express through that way. But yeah. Yeah. Coming soon.
Okay. You said you were in a pop punk band in what, high school?
In high school. I was in like two pop punk bands. The first one, I think we had one gig. It was like this cute girl's pool party that I wanted to ask to prom or homecoming. It's one of those things. You know, one of those things.
Yeah.
And then
did it work out?
We played the one gig and it was great. And then I don't think we played another gig after that. And then I think I ended up taking her sister to prom. I don't know.
That's awesome. So you played the show. You didn't ask her that day when the show was done?
That would have been cool. Like hop on the mic.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were going with. You're like, okay, thank you. And yo, would you like to go to the prom with me?
I was slow going, you know. I took a couple more hangs. More like little friend dates, couple more, you know, meet the parents. And then I was like, all right, I'm going to go for the sister.
You're like, now that I've established this, hey, so then was it older sister or younger sister?
It was her older sister.
There you go. And okay. So you had that one pop punk band, did one gig. And from there, was that kind of like your first experience playing in a band setting?
Yeah. That was my first experience. And then I had another band with like one of my homies from like elementary school. Like we reconnected one summer in high school and then I would come over, he would play the guitar and I would just sing. And then we start writing lyrics and stuff. And then that band, we got to finally play at the church where all the hardcore shows were.
Oh, you made it to the church.
We made it to the church.
That's good.
And then we were like, he was, his my homeboy's family, Jeff, his family was really into you know, they were very Christian, but it was like alternative Christian church. Uh-huh. And so they would have us come and like sing and play music like every like Wednesday for like the youth group. And so we would come up there and like, we would sing sometimes like gospel songs, but then we'd also like play pop punk songs for all these like church people. And like,
oh wow. Like covers or were they songs that you guys had written?
Yeah. We would play covers.
Oh, okay.
Of like Brand New.
And, oh man. I love that band. I know that he's had a lot of backlash in the recent years, but
can't listen to it anymore, man. I know.
But gee, man, that second record, Sick Transit, is like one of the best albums ever written, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I still get that stuff like playing in my head sometimes. I'm like,
but it's like, not to go off on a Brand New tangent, but it, like when it comes to, you know, he obviously horrible stuff and gets caught up in it and as he should, but it's like if you go back and listen to those first two records, it's like, was anyone really surprised?
Yeah, right. It's like like, oh, now it makes sense. Like,
yeah, it's like you listen to a song like Me versus Miranda versus Elvis and you're like, what? Well, this is already pretty creepy. He's talking about getting this chick wasted and taking her to his house and like, and it's just like, well, okay. And then it all comes out, it's like, well, you know, writing was on the wall back in 2002 or whatever it was.
Right. But everybody thought it was so creative. Oh, he's in this other character or something.
He's so deep.
So disconnected.
When he was just writing about it like a Thursday night.
Right.
okay. So tell me about when does, because this is a solo project, right? Life on Planets.
Yes. Yeah, so Life on Planets is a solo project. It actually started as a duo.
Really? And
yes.
Tell me about this, how it all came together.
So I was busking. I quit my job. I was a chimney sweep and
what?
I was working like 60 hours a week and I hated it. We weren't getting overtime pay and stuff like that. And yeah, it was just like so many hours for such hard work. And all I want to do is play music. I was reading about, I think it's Joan. Is it Joan Baez?
I'm not sure,
but there was this one artist, like a folk artist, that was like busking, playing on the street, and got picked up, got discovered.
And I think like, that's what, I think G-Love got found that way. I know really? Violent Femmes did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I decided to join the tradition of buskers and
okay.
Took my guitar, started playing on the street. And around that same time, you know, I was like living in this artist warehouse, this loft, like just practicing all the time. And so I'd be in there practicing my guitar all the time before I went out to busk, recording myself. And I had a roommate who was like, all right, man, like you played this one song like way too much. If I help you get it recorded, will you just never play it in the house again? Cause like it's stuck in my head. It's all I hear when I come home, like, please just.
Well, that's a good thing, right? I mean, at least it was good enough to where he remembered it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. He would recognize it. But so he hooked me up with this house producer who was living in the other artist loft. And he started to show me house and they started to like introduce me to electronic dance music. Or, you know, I mean, I knew about like Tiesto or whatever. Like,
right.
Hear my friends like play that stuff. And
the big names.
Like, yeah. But I always thought of it as this European thing. And then I watched this documentary that my friend passed me. I think it's Pump Up the Volume.
Mm-hmm.
And they really talk about the history of house and techno and how it's black music, you know? And I was like, oh, this is a tradition that I can just hop into here, you know, and feel comfortable with. So then started making house music with this producer. I think he goes by Discuji now, but he had a few other names back in the day. But I think he's embarrassed of them and I shouldn't share them. So he was like a Baltimore like promoter. He would bring different DJs in to like do the house music parties, would be like in the underground house music parties. And he sent some of our demos around to some of the labels. And then Wolf and Lamb, this label from New York, really liked our stuff and picked us up. But you know, in this industry,
the two of you, right?
As the two of us, yes.
Okay. So were you playing guitar or anything? Or like, were you still?
Yeah. So as a duo, I was mostly like the songwriter, lyricist. And then my homie, Discuji, he was the producer and the DJ when we would go and play live.
Okay.
So, you know, I would watch him, watch how he produced and would kind of like take little notes here and there. Mm-hmm. But
The genre jump kind of happened then.
I would say, yeah. I mean, when I think we started out and it was a little more like folk house. We got a lot of comparisons to Allo Black and that one guy, Avicii.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, because it was, you know, really more about my acoustic guitar and my voice. Mm-hmm. And then we just have kind of like really soft beats underneath. And then, you know, we started to go out and play more and hang out more with in the scene. And I started to absorb more house music and more electronic music going around. And then we started to experiment with some other sounds and stuff. But I don't know, in this industry, egos are hard to manage. Personalities are hard to balance. And so it was just like him and the guys from the label, like, didn't really see eye to eye or get along. Mm-hmm. And so it was all like from the beginning, it was like, you know, Life, why don't you just take over Life on Planets and leave the other guy? But I didn't want to leave my homie behind, you know.
Right.
He brought me up, brought me in. I was like, I wouldn't know any of you guys if it wasn't for him. So I'm not just gonna just abandon him.
Ditch him, right.
But eventually, like, it just got to be too much with the label and he decided to bow out and gave me the project.
Wow.
So I became Life.
Life on planets.
On planets, yeah.
Okay. And you said you were getting label interest. At this point, you were signed?
Like signed-ish. I feel like, you know, in the house music industry, it's really mostly handshakes. Mm-hmm. I didn't really start doing my first contracts with labels until maybe that year before the pandemic. And then, you know, started to like actually sign contracts with like Kitsune, like mm-hmm. Palm Records, RDA Records and stuff like that. But yeah, for the most part, it's handshake. And I think a lot of these electronic dance music labels are into, you know, like letting artists collaborate and release other places. Uh-huh. I went into it, you know, thinking like, oh, it's going to be like all these behind the music things and like,
right.
Watch out. My folks are like, be careful. Don't sign anything, you know, sign something before you go in the studio, you know, but uh-huh. All these guys they're just trying to make it on their own too. And so it's very supportive, you know, very nurturing environment to be in.
That's cool. Was your dad pretty supportive of what you had going on always? I mean, being a DJ growing up, like, you know, you tell them, hey, I'm going to go live in this art studio and busk. And like, was that something that they were like, or supportive of it?
Yeah, my dad was supportive. He would actually ride up from Gaithersburg, where I grew up, to Baltimore. And he'd come jam with me sometimes.
Really?
We actually played, one show together. And then we released like a body of work, it was just us jamming with some other guys from the school in the studio. And my dad loved it so much. He put it out on CD Baby. And
really?
So yeah, he's always been supportive.
That's awesome.
He'll spin my CDs. He's got my vinyl.
Does he still DJ?
No, I've been trying to get him back into it. I got to show him Record Box, you know, but it's a whole nother level. He's got all this vinyl that he's got to rip. And so, but it'd be a fun project to do.
That would be awesome. That would be really rad. Okay. So talk to me. You said you signed this deal in right before the pandemic. Is that what you said?
I mean,
you're,
I guess
like, you're in the conversations right before the pandemic.
Yeah. 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 I mean, but you know, even that stuff's pretty, open-ended, like mm-hmm. non-exclusive, licensing for like maybe like 10 years or something,
which wow.
It feels like not a long time. Compared mm-hmm. to some of the scope of these other contracts. But yeah, started signing more music, really getting a lot of music out there, especially during the pandemic, and working with like a lot of other labels. Because before it was really just like Wolf and Lamb and Soul Clap and their combined label, Crew Love.
Mm-hmm. With that was like, yeah, you talked about putting a lot of music out during the pandemic. Like when that hit was... like, how did it affect you? Were you like on the road or anything, or were you just kind of getting ready to put out music?
I did have like some really, really exciting music lined up. Cause also like it was, I've spent maybe the last year, maybe 2 years developing the solo life on Planet Sound. And during that time, I was still like touring and also putting out music that, you know, we had wrapped up as a duo with my former partner. And so 2020 was like going to be the year where like all of this cool new music that was combining more like hip hop influences with the house music, more R&B influences with the house music, and also like showcasing some of my solo productions. So that stuff was coming up, like my first music video and all that stuff was coming, you know, to release it during the pandemic was really strange, but it worked out. I mean, I don't know if there would have been more, you know, touring or a bigger splash if I had been able to like play the music out mm-hmm. around the time it had come out, but hey, it's out there. It did its thing. And I got, you know, hit up by more labels and more collaborators after it. So I think it did its part.
Yeah. And I mean, you got a lot of streams on Spotify. I'm sure that didn't hurt when it comes right. to like people wanting to reach out.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But yeah.
Was it something that you were thinking about not putting out? I know a lot of artists had a body of work ready to come out, and then it was like, well, you know, we can't tour it. We can't really do a big promotion campaign. Maybe we should hold on to the record for 6 months or whatever it is. Was that even a thought in your head or no?
It was definitely a thought. And then I think a secondary thought that occurred was like, there's so much going on in the world right now. You know, we've got this pandemic. There's this like release brutality. And I kind of got into this like DJ Khaled mindset, like they don't want us to win. They don't want us to put out music right now. They don't want us to celebrate. They don't want us to dance in the streets. And so I was like, you know, like, let's just put it out. And I talked to, I had a conversation with Soul Clap because I think that was the first, that record was coming out around the time of George Floyd. And he was like, yo, like, how can we make you comfortable with this like album coming out? Like, what can we do? And we decided to donate a percentage of the proceeds from the album to Black Lives Matter.
Oh, wow.
And so that, you know, felt like a better way to kind of still have the music and still, I don't know, like just bring attention to what was going on and do something good. And then mm-hmm. that conversation led to me, you know, talking to Kitsune Musique in Paris, and having a conversation with them. And so we decided to donate a portion of the proceeds from that record to Campaign Zero. It's one of another guy from Black Lives Matter, but it's more focused on like police brutality and campaigning and making more laws to just prevent something like George Floyd from happening again.
Oh, well, I've never heard of that company, or you know, I'm sure it's a nonprofit. I haven't heard of them before.
Yeah, Campaign Zero. I mean, they were a newer one that kind of, I think, came out around the time of George Floyd.
Right. I mean, anything, right, to bring awareness to all that happened is awful.
Yeah.
So you have the most recent record that's where the money, like what album did you put out to put that money into? Because you have a new record out, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. I'm trying to Nomad Life is the new record.
Nomad Life's the new record.
Okay. Yes. So this is a record prior to Nomad Life that you're talking about?
Yeah. So this was 2020, and that was my EP Only You.
Okay.
And my other EP called Glow Stick.
Oh, you put two records out in 2020.
Yeah. I mean, you know, EPs, like
your
like
EPs,
four or five songs.
Yeah, yeah. Still like what? 10 songs over the course. So tell me about, were some of those, like the first EP, was that done prior to the pandemic or was that written during it?
Yeah. Both EPs were done. I worked on most of that stuff like in Baltimore and like while I was both touring around and stuff. And then the second EP Glow Stick, I did that in New York with my homie Taylor Benz. And he had a studio there in New York and it was like, we like really locked into a groove and a sound. And yeah, that stuff was all done maybe like fall of 2019. And then we just set the release dates and sat on it for a while.
Okay. And then you moved to New York, you said the summer right before the pandemic hits.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I mean, talk about like the gnarliest spot to be in the US. I mean, aside from maybe like, what was it, Seattle, where it really first started to hit, but mm-hmm. New York was on TV always. I mean, that was the spot. I mean, that must have been such a trip to go from, okay, like I'm moving to this big city and now I'm in this big city and nobody can leave, right? I mean, did you think about moving back to Maryland at all or like?
I had thought about it. I mean, I had a girlfriend at the time. And okay. So we actually went up to her folks' vacation home in New Hampshire. It was like right before like the lockdown and stuff. And it was kind of like, she had to, they were selling the property. And so my girl had to go and like clean up and nobody else had really had the time. And so she was like, hey, you want to go stay up here for a week? We'll hang out and then, you know, we can come back and by the time, you know, in a week, this pandemic thing will be, it'll be over, this lockdown stuff. And then we ended up staying in New Hampshire for the next, the next couple of months.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, obviously nobody was going to look at the house to buy it, I bet.
Right. Yeah.
So somebody had to keep everything moving in there. What was it? Were you able to write a lot of music while you were there?
I did. I mean, I felt like it was a lot of like maybe more experimenting and trying some new things out. It was definitely amazing to have all that time to just work on music. I definitely like finished a lot of stuff that had been like sitting on the shelf and got to a lot of collaborations that that I hadn't had the time for before. And so yeah, a lot of that stuff is actually coming out like these next like 3 months.
Oh, awesome. Was it interesting? I mean, you were collaborating via the internet. Was that the first time you've ever done that?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I had recorded some stuff at home and like would send my vocals, but this was like, a big shift and turning point. I think, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, let's get in the studio and let's have you over here. And yeah, it was like, oh, you know, I don't really need a whole studio. I just need this mic and I can just record everything from the house and send it to people. And yeah, even with like some recordings, you know, I didn't have like all my gear when I first came to New Hampshire and then, you know, had just like a performance mic, like a live mic and sent it to some guys and like had like amazing recordings just built off of like a demo or a scratch I might've sent and they made it sound. So yeah, it really taught me a lot about the flexibility that we have these days with our technology.
Right. I mean, now you can work with somebody across the, everyone's so familiar with, you know, software like Zoom or whatever platforms like this, that now you could collaborate with somebody across the world in real time. And it's not like, okay, we got to fly life out to, you know, Sweden so you can write a record with so-and-so. It's like, you could just hop on the computer and do it that way. Is that something, is it like, how is it, you know, have you done like a Zoom writing session like this or?
Actually, I haven't. I've been wanting to. I've done like, there's another app, I think it's called Jam something or Fret Play. I forget, but I try, it was like, it's a Zoom, but you can, it's supposed to be like lower latency. So you can like actually jam.
Oh, sure.
I've tried that with a homie and like, and done that thing, but I haven't actually done like a Zoom writing session. Okay. Maybe some Zoom like mixing listening sessions. Mm-hmm. But yeah, mostly guys just send me the music and then they're like, do your thing, I'll record and then send it back.
I love it. That's awesome. Well, talk to me about the new record, Nomad Life.
So Nomad Life, this is like a new old record. I was looking back at my notes and some of my saved projects. I started this song Nomad Life in 2016.
Oh my gosh.
and it was, you know, around that time when I was doing Life on Planet solo and trying to figure out like some, you know, some of these new sounds. Or actually I take that back. It was when I was trying to figure out, I was still doing Life on Planet, but trying to also figure out like this alter ego identity. And I was like moving around a lot, you know, touring, bouncing from place to place, hitting, you know, Baltimore, you know, to go hang out with my homies and party and work on music. And then, you know, I'd go back home and hang out with my mom, you know, and it just felt like I was bouncing around all the time, like sleeping somewhere different all the time. And so Nomad Life, you know, it was like, I'm living that nomad life, but it started out as like more of like an R&B like trap song. And then I kept holding on to this nomad life thing, because like I'm still constantly moving around, still sleeping in different places, sleeping on couches, sleeping in hotel rooms, sleeping in Airbnbs, whatever. It's nomad life. And then I was working on this new sound when I went solo with Light Funk Planets, and trying to incorporate more of that funk that my dad would play me in the car like growing up. And mm-hmm. and so this song, I was looking at the Gap Band. There's this one song, Early in the Morning, and it's got this bass line on this like Moog, and it's like doo 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 doo. And I was like, oh man, let me play around with some vibes like that. Mm-hmm. And then so I had the bass line first, I had these beats, and I just kind of kept reworking the beats as I kept going, like through the years. I would send the song out to labels, but nobody was really biting. And then my manager was like, hey, Walker & Loyce, they've got like a new label, like, and they want to hear some of your stuff. Let's send them some demos. And I threw this in there. I think I had just reworked it again to like fit kind of this new mold of this hip hop flavored house kind of stuff, and added some more like trappy elements, like the like da 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 da. Get it, you know. And they liked it, and they were like, yo, we love this, let's mix it for you, and let's maybe add some more elements here. They added this little like synth part that's like very Rick Jamesy. It's like it really like brought the whole thing together. So that's Nomad Life. We went out to the desert to Joshua Tree and filmed the whole video, got like outfitted by this Hollywood Western outfitter.
Oh, and I love the photos of in the video. I mean, I just saw the video, but the photos that you were teasing on your Instagram are so good.
It was my first time riding a horse.
What was that like?
I was pretty terrified. You hear about people getting thrown from horses and stuff, and they're like, no, you just gotta just be one with the horse. So that, I don't know, but the woman at the Crazy Horse Ranch, she was very helpful, very soothing energy, where you're like, you got this, you know, just ride. He knows what you want. He's way more sensitive than you are. So he knows where you're looking and where you're seated, how you're seated, and he'll just go where you want to go. And we made it happen.
Wow. So he's a pretty timid horse. It wasn't like you had some gnarly horse. That's good that they brought a beginner horse.
Yeah. Chill horse.
Chill horse.
I think he's a little bit older. Webster.
His name is Webster. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. So because total Western vibes, obviously. And then the Wanted poster, which I love.
Yeah.
$88. Where'd you come up with that?
I really love the number 8. I mean, you know, when you flip it on its side, it's infinity.
Right.
It's so curvy. And it has like, you know, perfect symmetry. Uh-huh. So 8 is probably one of my favorite numbers. I used to be super into numerology.
Okay.
To the point where I actually changed my name so that the numbers in my name would match up with the numbers in my birthday.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Like legally you went and changed your name?
I didn't legally change it.
But you changed your name
People still call me that old name, like that I see around. Or, like if I say, they're like, oh, hey, because I changed it to Deer, D-H-E-E-R,
uh-huh.
Which I think makes sense, because I think Deer means calm. And then I'm an Aries. So, yeah, you have this like maybe like polarizing energy that will like balance out the flame of the Aries energy. But
that's a way cooler explanation than I thought. You're going to be like, yeah, I was born in 88.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Well, that wasn't exciting, but I love that. It's numerology. I haven't heard much about this.
Yeah. You know, they say that all the numbers in your birth date and your name, they all add up to one number that has a vibration. I mean, there's like, it's really like the numbers 1 through 9, and then because every other number after that can be reduced to a single digit, except for these like master numbers like 11 or 22, which I think have a whole different thing about them, but
because they're double digits,
I guess so.
Or two of the same are.
Mm-hmm.
So how would I do that with my name? I just use I have my first name has 4, and then
so it's
seven.
Like, every letter has a corresponding number. I think it cycles like A, you know, A is one, and then it cycles every nine until you get to the N. And so you would find those numbers of the letters in your name and then add those up to a single digit. And then you would add all the numbers in your name up to a single digit. And then that would be, I think that's your, it's not your life path number. It's like your personality number, I think.
Wow. I'm intrigued by this. I'm going to do some heavy Googling after this interview.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, I think in this last decade, or maybe in the last like 5 years, we've all become very obsessed with astrology and like moon signs and ascendants and, oh, Venus is in retrograde or Mercury's in retrograde, you know? And so, yeah, I was on that stuff, like, but even deeper with like numbers. And,
wow. And, yeah. I love that. Do you include your middle name or just your first and last?
You should include your middle name. And if you have like a junior or
you include that as well.
Second. Yeah. You include that.
Okay. But yeah. I need to make sure I'm doing this correctly so I get the accurate number.
And it was like, if I had a new band name or if I had like a solo artist name, I would put it in my numerology calculator and like, and see what the vibration was and stuff. It was like really bad. And like anytime, any name, I would be like, oh, I have to check it out first.
Okay. Before I forget, I'm going to numerology calculator.
Yeah.
Cause I want to know, this is cool. I'm super, mm-hmm. I'm super interested in this now. Sorry, I went off on this weird tangent. Glad I asked about that 88. So Nomad Life is the most recent record. You said you have more coming out soon.
There's more on the way. So there's Nomad Life with RDA, and then that's going to be a two-sided single with You Did It to Yourself,
okay.
Which is maybe a little more like a little more housey, a little more hip hop. And it's basically about karma, thinking about guys that like, you know, there's not very often, but there's guys that sometimes you pay them for something and they never show up at the work. They disappear. Guys that, you know, you play a show for them and then they never pay you after, you know? So
right. Yeah.
It's like, all right, well, you did it to yourself and karma's going to catch up with you. But then after that, I've got a record coming on Snake Hips label, Never Worry Records. I'm excited for that one. I think it's, you know, more experiments along that line of the hip hop house. And I think I'm getting closer to like refining the sound. So that's going to be really, really good. And those records are kind of based on my time in New York. And like, I was living in, Bed-Stuy, which was still gentrified, but like less gentrified, or at least you'd have like, maybe like more pockets of like people who've been living there, you know, for like decades.
Right.
Versus people who've been living there for like just the past
six,
like
6 weeks.
Yeah.
mom and dad wanted to have some money and they want to send them to New York. So they get an apartment there or whatever.
Or like, you know, you have a family that goes and just buys a whole brownstone.
Oh, like, right. Yeah.
Starts renting it out on Airbnb or something. You know, it's like, wow. But yeah. So based on that, and well, I guess that's the A, and the B side is based on, just feeling like very, I don't know, like loose during the pandemic, or like uptight, but also loose, like not only feeling like not like inspired, but at the same time, like unmotivated because nothing's going on, nothing's happening, the world's burning. And then, you know, I feel like a lot of people were like drinking more often. I was drinking more often in New Hampshire. The booze is super cheap and nothing.
Oh yeah. So many like mental health issues and addiction and, you know, substance abuse came out of this last 2 years.
Yeah. And I talk about that, about partying more, about experimenting with weed and alcohol and mushrooms more during the pandemic and just feeling like what's going on. And then the next record, this is going to be super dope. It's coming out on Toki Monsters label, Young Art, and it's a 4-song EP. And I was able to record a 4 video, like video to encapsulate the project. Yeah.
Right. So it's like a four, like all, there's four songs on the record, and then each song has a correlating video that would like all kind of comes together in one.
In one video. Yeah. So it's like maybe like a minute, 45 seconds for each song, and it kind of goes through each. And so, yeah, that feels fun. Yeah.
What's the journey in the song? Is it kind of, or can you even tell me?
I mean, it's kind of based on this art project I had. I went to art school, and so I'm always like, I can be more like very conceptual when it comes to this stuff, but like, it's kind of like we start out in, I'm going to tell you abstract so that I don't give too much away, but we start okay. off like in the physical space, or rather in a void. And then we create our physical space, you know, with our imagination. And then it kind of goes from like something very like, I don't know, like concrete in the physical space to something very fantastic. And then the fantasy like continues to expand and explode. And then it's like on this journey as you rise up to touch, you know, the spirit or the higher purpose. Eventually you have to come back down to the world. And so then I come back to the world and I'm like, maybe more, I maybe realized, but also maybe more like of the world in the world. And then, you know, there's friends, there's libations, there's clothing, there's, you know, there's material now. And, mm-hmm. and so, yeah, but I think the ultimate goal of any artist is to touch that spiritual place and reach it, you know, reach your monkhood, your hermitage or whatever, but then to still be able to balance that with the earth and with material, with the physical, with our instruments, with our clothes, with the way we'd like to express ourselves in a social manner. So it's kind of that's the loose interpretation of the video.
I love it. I can't wait to see the video. I mean, especially, are you going to release it in parts, like to be continued type thing? Like first one's going to come out a little bit later, second one. So it's not, you're not going to get the whole story in one.
You know what?
Swoop.
I guess we could do that. I hadn't thought of that. But
okay. Yeah. I'm like giving you an idea to like mess with your fans.
Which I love. Because we are going to release two singles first. And so they go in order, like of the music video. So the first part could drop, the second part, and that's like, oh, and then the next two parts drop and you've got the whole video. I've got a call with them today. So that's
it. Oh, there you go.
Great idea to pitch.
Go ahead and use that idea.
Thank you. Thank you, Adam.
I love it. I love it. Well, Life, man, you are awesome. I appreciate your time, and sorry about the confusion in the beginning there.
No sweat.
But I do have one quick last question for you. I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
Advice for aspiring artists. I mean, I would say for any aspiring artist, it's maybe conflicting advice. But I feel like everybody tells you, you know, do your thing, experiment and see what sticks, you know, see what resonates with people, see what you feel best about. And to really try to hone in on what makes you feel the best when you're performing, what makes you, what, you know, what really touches people and communicates to people as well when you're performing, and to really just remember that and to try to not chase it, but to hone in on it. I'd say that, and also just to like really just keep your communication lines open. I feel like the whole game is based on communication, like reaching out to people, reaching out to promoters, getting involved in any scene that you want to be a part of. And it's as simple as just like starting a conversation, as simple as just asking, simple as sending the email or the DM, and just being persistent and just keep trying, keep shooting, keep, you know, throwing darts until something hits the board.